Welcome to another edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm Brian DeNovellis. The holidays are here. Happy Hanukkah. Christmas is right around the corner. But get this, it was a dog-eat-dog world at People's Bank Arena, and Butler was wearing milk-bone underwear. Hey, thank you, Norm. Norm from Cheers. If you know, you know. One of the great Norm quotes of all time. It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear. What does that mean? That means the Huskies ate the Bulldogs. That means Huskies are greater than Bulldogs again as UConn beats Butler for the 12th straight time. 12-0 all-time against the Butler Bulldogs. That is domination. Meanwhile, at Carneseca Arena.
Trying to thread the needle, kept it alive. Trey kicks out. Dylan Darling has been Darling tonight.
Yeah, Dylan Darling was indeed Darling for St. John's. Hey, cue the diamonds.
A little darling, bump, 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 you are a little darling.
Oh, well, how are you?
Oopa, 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 oopa.
Name that tune. Anyone? Anyone? I'll give you a hint. American Graffiti soundtrack. Anyone? Little Darling, 1957, The Diamonds. Dylan Darling is our little darling, came alive. And I guess the shot doctor, the miracle maker, Rick Pitino himself, did an extreme makeover with Dylan Darling. And suddenly, Dylan Darling could shoot the basketball just in time for St. John's Big East opener against DePaul.
My darling, I need you.
We're talking UConn. We're talking St. John's and my special guest, Dylan Wanigale, the Vice President, Sports Properties and Special Events at Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment. He had a busy week, has a busy week at the Prudential Center. Saturday night, it was Seton Hall and Rutgers in a sold-out 11,000-seat lower bowl at The Rock this coming Saturday. January 20th, it is the Never Forget Tribute Classic. Two top 25 teams, Arkansas and Houston. We'll talk to Dylan and get to all of the events coming up at the Prudential Center. What a show we have for you. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Mike Supa from RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, get in touch with Mike. It's the holiday season. You can get them at RE/MAX Revolution, 201-988-2577, and tell them that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, it is my pleasure now to welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast for the first time, Dylan Wanigale. He is the Vice President, Sports Properties and Special Events with Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment. If that is a big title for you, just know this. He is the vice president of events and games and sporting events and all types of entertainment at the Prudential Center in Newark, but it also goes down to Philadelphia and all the way down to Northwest Stadium, home of the Washington Commanders. So from Washington to Newark, if you're looking for a sporting event, a big time sporting event, odds are Dylan may have a little hand in it. Dylan, does that sound right?
That sounds about right. Very kind of you, Brian. Appreciate that. Thank you so much for that warm introduction.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. And it's been great getting to know you. And I saw you just the other night at Seton Hall Rutgers at the Prudential Center. So let's begin there, Dylan, because there's a lot I want to talk about and some, you know, I want to promote some events coming up at the Prudential Center. But that was a fun atmosphere. You know, after last year and what happened with Seton Hall, their worst year, you know, in their 100-plus year history of playing men's basketball, they've turned it around quickly. And to see the Prudential Center sellout lower bowl, 11,000 fans. I thought it was a great atmosphere. What did you think?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. It was complete, so electric. I have to say, Saturday was a really interesting night for me. One of the other venues we manage is White Eagle Hall in Jersey City. So I spent the first half of my night there with Sumo Fight Club watching sumo wrestling.
Okay.
And then I watched the first six matches, and then I had to book it over from Jersey City to Newark to make it in time for the opening tip-off, which I barely did. But it was great. So to walk into that electric atmosphere, student section was completely packed, which is always great to see. I think back to my own experiences as a student when I was at St. John's, going to the Garden for Big East games, and how fun that was. So it was good to see this next generation of students enjoying college basketball and really bringing the energy that you like to see.
Now, listen, I want to talk more college hoops. This is the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, but you piqued my interest. Sumo wrestling in Jersey City.
Yeah, so and to be specific, at White Eagle Hall, which has its own basketball connection, where that's where St. Anthony's, when they were the number one team in the country, ran all their practices. Legendary coach Bob Hurley, obviously his sons Bob and Danny, who are now, you know, who were great players and are now great coaches in their own right. We'll see Danny Hurley here next month. White Eagle Hall set it up with a big the doyo, as they call it, which is the wrestling mat, and there were 12 sumo wrestlers in the house, and the event was won by a gentleman who's become my friend now. He goes by the nickname of Sandstorm, and he is he used to compete in Japan in the real big sumo matches, and now he's launched his own sumo promotional company and is going to give it a go as a promoter in addition to wrestler. So it's so much fun, I gotta say. Those are fun events. You should come out to the next one.
I would love to. When is the next one, and how well attended is it?
Sure. So White Eagle Hall really has a capacity for sumo wrestling of around 250 people or so, and it was completely sold out Saturday night. We are in discussions with them to make that leap to Prudential Center. And we're talking about some different dates. And, you know, we did one sumo wrestling event at Prudential Center with a different promoter, February of 2023. And that was a blast. Maybe it was 24. Anyway, great event. We had like 6,000 people here. They were literally all chanting sumo, sumo. So it was a lot of the sport itself is very easy to understand. You either, you know, who gets pushed out of the circle first, basically.
Right.
Also, if you get taken down, but it's more so about the pushouts. So it's easy to digest if you've never seen sumo wrestling before. Shout out to the sumo. It's a fun group, fun event.
Oh, that is all. I've watched it. I've seen documentaries, you know, the Yokozuna. And I remember there was a guy named Konishiki who was from Hawaii. I think he was the first Hawaiian-American born.
Okay.
Yokozuna, right?
Yeah, it's quite a culture. Quite a culture. And those guys in Japan are icons, legends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So sumos. Listen, I want to go. I think my wife, my kids, let's do it. All right. So let's
love it. I'll keep you posted when we get it confirmed.
Yes.
But yes, so I had a unfortunately run out of there, but I made it over here in time and for the tip, and boy, Garden State Hardwood Classic delivered once again, and a great rivalry, and it's wonderful for us to host it every other year.
Yeah, so this is not the Tri-State sumo podcast, but listen, we're promoting all the events here, and you're not just about basketball with what you're doing, but near and dear to my heart with college hoops. You know, how fun has it been to work with Seton Hall and see what they've done there and have them as a tenant? What's that like?
Yeah, it's great. I started here April of 2021, and over that time, I've become very close with Brian Felt, their athletic director, Tom Chen, associate AD on communications, and all there. They have a great staff of executives there. Jimmy O'Donnell, a legend in the sport.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But you really have to hand it to Coach Holloway and his staff for, in this, the most interesting time ever, to actually put together a men's college basketball roster with this transfer portal, and everyone's basically got an entirely new roster every season or close to it. And boy, has he pulled together just an electric bunch of players who really seem to enjoy playing for each other and play in a very unselfish fashion. They clearly love playing defense, and you know, they can score the ball too. So like, boy, great bunch of players that they have there. Kudos to Shaheen and his staff, and really excited for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's been a meteoric rise, and I think the fans who you lost and Seton Hall lost from last year, not saying that they lost them in the rooting interest, but lost them attending the games. I would like to think that based on what they've done, 10-1, that they're going to start coming out, and their Big East home opener is less than a week away, right around the corner against
Correct.
Villanova on
Yep.
December 23rd. Villanova is usually a good draw for you. So
For sure.
how are ticket sales for that, Dylan?
Yeah, great buzz around that particular game. I think, like you saw at the Garden State Hardwood Classic, the lower bowl will be completely full. Great energy. Yes, a lot of Nova fans will come up from Philly. And the Hall fans, if you look at any of the comments on Twitter or whatever you frequent, boy, they're getting loud, they're getting boisterous, they're really excited about their team. The AP poll came out yesterday, and they're third in the others receiving votes, so essentially 28th overall out of what is it, 350 Division I teams or thereabouts. So really exciting times. Like you said, last year was a tough year, but they retooled and got the right guys that they wanted, and boy, they're gelling very nicely.
Listen, there was a time when Seton Hall basketball, when I was at school and in the 80s and 90s, when they were selling out what was called Continental Airlines Arena, the old Brendan Byrne Arena, right? You have had moments here recently. I remember the Villanova game when Miles Powell was there. That must have been 18,000 that you had there because you opened it up. It was the last home game. I think it was senior night. Big win by Villanova over the Hall. That was the COVID year, right? They shut down just
Yes.
a few months later.
Yep.
So there's something about college basketball in New Jersey, but in that arena that just draws fans. And I'm not saying it's Madison Square Garden, but if you want to watch some big time college basketball, and especially this year, Villanova coming in, UConn, St. John's, you're going to have some teams coming in. It's a good time to go to a Seton Hall basketball game in Newark, I would think.
Yeah, it sure is, Brian. Appreciate the kind words. Yeah, we feel like there's a great atmosphere in New Jersey. New Jersey sports fans are very real, very authentic, very loud. They will let you know how they feel about your play or whatever call you just made. So, and we like that. That's all part of the live event experience. So yeah, in addition to Seton Hall being great this year, we'll talk a little bit about Never Forget Tribute Classic coming up with Arkansas and Houston. But yeah, it's a great place to come see a basketball game. So I encourage all the New Jersey basketball fans, or just sports fans in general. You want a good night out? Come out to the Rock for college hoops.
Great selling point. And the other thing too, Dylan, you just mentioned it. So you led me right there. The Never Forget Tribute Classic, Saturday, December 20th, 5:30 p.m. This is for college hoops diehards. I'll tell you, Arkansas, Houston, John Calipari, Kelvin Sampson, two Hall of Fame coaches in my book. How'd you get those two teams?
Yeah, we're thrilled to have it. Shout out to our new event partners in Intersport. They're one of the leading third-party event promoters in the college basketball space. I know a gentleman there, Mark Starziak, has been a friend for many years. Great guy. They have a great team of people there. And they came to us saying, hey, like Arkansas and Houston are looking for a game in the Northeast around the Christmas holiday times. We're looking at venues in the area, and we were thrilled to be in the mix and said, hey, like, let's do it here in Newark. And we also have this brand. The event could have been called, Holiday Hoop Showdown or something like that. But we said to them, hey, like, we've been building this Never Forget Tribute Classic brand. This is the 8th edition. We'd love to make this event part of what we've been building here. What's really interesting is now all the players in this game were not even born when 9/11 happened. So part of this is, educating, some of the youth about, 343 firefighters passed away in 9/11, 72 law enforcement officers. Like, a lot of heroes gave their lives at a very tragic day in the United States history. There's always been a donation to a charity, a 9/11 related charity. This year, our partner will be VetTix and their sister company, FirstTix, which is a great company that gives tickets to events for military veterans and first responders. And we're trying to help them grow their message. So going to be a great event. Houston's number 8 in the country, Arkansas number 14. Like you said, legendary coaches. Arkansas, has DJ Wagner. I mean, we remember his
Yeah,
father
we
and his
do. Sure.
grandfather
Yes,
as
we
basketball
do.
players. So, great event. We're super, super excited for it.
Yeah, Milt Wagner
Yeah,
from
Milt from
Plano.
Louisville, right?
Yep,
Yeah,
yep. And DeJuan Wagner from Camden.
yeah.
And
Yeah,
it goes on. Yeah, we're you and I are basically the same age, Dylan.
yeah.
So
Yeah,
we've been around for those
we've seen some
Wagners.
hoops. Yeah, we've seen some hoops. Yeah.
You guys, you'd really do a good job. Last year, I was at the Princeton Rutgers game, which was the Never Forget Tribute Classic. I was also at Villanova, Maryland last year,
Yeah.
which was a heck of a game that Maryland won. And they
Yeah.
ended up, going to the Sweet 16 with Kevin Willard. So, how do you keep pulling in these teams, national brands as well as local brands?
Yeah, good question there. Two-parter. Both of those games essentially buzzer beaters. I remember Villanova had a shot in the air to win, and it rimmed out. And then in the Princeton Rutgers game, Princeton scored with just a few seconds left, and Dylan Harper came down, had a shot in the air to win it. Didn't go in. So like you basically had two buzzer beater type events, which hopefully we'll have on Saturday the 20th as well with Arkansas Houston. But to take a step back, yeah, the Villanova Maryland game was through Gazelle Group. Rick Giles, who's a great friend, he brought that event here. And we've done many events with Gazelle Group over the years. And it's a great company. Really enjoy working with them. And then Never Forget Tribute Classic. That one we really wound up doing on our own last year. And I will say that, Rutgers obviously had Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey and so much buzz around their program. Princeton had Lee and Pierce and a really great team. And that was just such an electric atmosphere. The whole place was packed, including the Upper Bowl. And that was kind of a pinch me moment that, wow, like you plan these events, you do your best to market them and you do your best to get PR around them. But ultimately, you never know exactly how it's going to turn out. But that one turned out even better than expected. And it was just a tremendous day.
And then the regional finals, the Sweet 16 and regional final was in Newark last year at the Prudential Center. I've been fortunate enough to go to these games at the Prudential Center. 2011, I think North Carolina came out of the East region at the Prudential Center, won a national championship. Duke last year, Arizona, Alabama, BYU. I mean, you had dudes up and down. Obviously, Cooper Flagg, the number one pick. I'll say that. Let me say this, Don. I watch a lot of college basketball, and I know you do too. You look at other buildings around the country for NCAA tournament games. They're not always packed. Even some of the Sweet 16s, they're not always packed. Every time I've seen NCAA tournament games come to Newark, come to the Prudential Center, they are sold out. And you can't say that for every arena.
Well, thanks, Brian. I appreciate that. Yes, I think what we've seen here is the appetite for college basketball is very strong. Newark is a very easy place to get to, quite frankly. So when you have teams from all over the country, we are minutes from Newark Airport, or if you're already on the East Coast, you can take a train to within 2 blocks of here. I drive here every day. It's pretty easy. So it's an easy place to get to. There are, in addition, look, naturally, there are millions of people in Manhattan and on that side of the river, but even in North and Central Jersey, there are millions of people that can easily get here. So you have this massive pool of sports fans and college hoops fans to market to. And really, there was no issue selling tickets for East Regional last year. We sold everything we possibly had to
I mean,
offer.
you had four big name programs with Duke, Arizona, Alabama, and BYU. They were all there.
Yeah, I would love to say we planned it that way, but that's the college basketball gods smiling upon us. Yeah, naturally those four programs have massive followings. And in the Sweet 16 round, all of them were very well represented. I'd say for the Elite Eight game, yeah, the Duke crazies kind of took over a little bit. They were out in full force. But yeah, it was great to have four, iconic programs here in Newark.
And that Alabama game, that was a record-breaking game with the three-pointers.
Yeah, Alabama set the all-time NCAA men's basketball tournament record with 25 made three-pointers. And look, I guess on some level, you think of every possible thing that could go wrong. And like, oh, well, any of the players think we didn't have the right shooting background or something like that. Well, clearly
Right.
there was a good shooting background because Alabama, basically could not miss against BYU, who put up a good fight on their own right. But yeah, Alabama that night was on fire.
Yeah, big time games there. It was a lot of fun to see. Will we see an NCAA tournament or, first and second round or regional final here again soon?
Well, we sure hope so. Myself and 400 other executives from around the country were out in Indianapolis back in September when the NCAA held their symposium where they talk about upcoming bid specifications and when the bid portal, not the transfer portal, but the bid portal,
Okay.
will open. In due time, in the fall is when the bid portal will open, and everyone who's competing for these events, which is a lot of people will have a chance to put their best foot forward. And then the NCAA evaluates everything from there. But we'd like to think that everything went, very smoothly. We got positive feedback from the NCAA. So hopefully, I guess it's around February of 2027 or around then is when they'll announce like the winners for the next round of events. So they're already have announced 2027 and 2028, but 2029 and beyond, that's the next cycle, and that's what we'll all be bidding upon, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, listen, yeah, you'd have to be living under a rock and have no clue to see, not to see what's going on at the Prudential Center with college basketball and how popular it is come, year round. So.
Well, thank you, Brian. Yeah, we do feel really good about it. Seton Hall was the host university for the East Regional last year. Brian Felt, Tom Chin, all those guys and all their staff did a tremendous job on the event, and they were great partners for us and great partners for the NCAA and making sure that operationally everything ran very smoothly. So we'll hopefully be in the mix.
Good stuff. And then you have the Never Forget Tribute Classic, which we talked about December 20th on Saturday. And then you have an MLK Martin Luther King Day doubleheader with women's college basketball on January 19th.
We're very excited for the second annual Coretta Scott King Classic. We launched it last year, two games on Big Fox on Martin Luther King Day.
Nice.
This year we have four, top 20 teams again, Michigan versus Vanderbilt, TCU versus Ohio State, once again on Fox. Women's basketball continues to grow exponentially. The ratings for these games are now greater than ever before, which is fun to see, and happy for the growth of the women's game. We've always been very supportive of women's sports. We also have the PWHL Sirens women's hockey team that calls Prudential Center home now. So, looking forward to that one. Should be two great games. Once again.
Awesome, Dylan. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you about all the great college basketball games and events that come to the Prudential Center in the past, in the future. Seton Hall basketball to look forward to this year. The Pirates seem to be back. Anything else we need to know about? Disney on Ice or something big, monster trucks coming up that you want to talk about here?
Not coming up, but we just had our debut tennis event, A Racket at the Rock, where we did a nice honoring of Althea Gibson, who's an iconic tennis player who also was a pro golfer and also boxed. And she's got a
Amazing.
nice rich history here in Newark, a huge statue of her here in Newark. So, debut of professional tennis here, where we have the number one player in the world, Carlos Alcaraz. Was here. Frances Tiafoe was here, and we also had Jessica Pegula and Amanda Anisimova, who was born in Freehold, by the way. So
Yes,
yeah, we're
yes.
always trying new things. I keep you posted on the sumo date.
Yes, I'm
We've been
in.
for we've been fortunate enough to have UFC with big events here the past 3 years. Hopefully, we'll get them back. Always working on trying to get some more boxing here. So it's a full slate of events, and we'll keep you posted on everything. And for the Seton Hall fans coming out, we now have a Seton Hall branded cup. So you're
Okay.
buying a beer or a soft drink, you get yourself a Seton Hall branded cup. So
That's a beautiful
enjoy.
mug. Beautiful mug.
No, we're excited that our venue has always done well with concerts and family entertainment, but now on the sports side, we're really growing that business as well.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I've been to many, many events there and always love getting there. So, Dylan Wanigail, Vice President of Sports Properties and Special Events for Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment. I have to read that one. That's not in my mind. It's quite a title, Dylan, and you had quite a bit of information. It's been a lot of fun. Thank
Oh,
you.
good. Same here, Brian. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, my thanks to Dylan Wanagale. Hey, if you want to see a big-time college basketball game right before the holidays, plenty of good seats available. This is a must-see college basketball game in the tri-state between two Hall of Fame coaches and two very good NCAA tournament-bound teams with championship pedigree. Get out there and see it. All right, speaking of championship pedigree, let's talk about those UConn Huskies.
UConn Huskies, UConn Huskies, Huskies, UConn, woof.
And the two people we want to talk about the most, following their 79-60 thumping over Butler, Jaden Ross and Solo Ball, both players having breakout games. And let's just start with Jaden Ross, because he has been a player who has just been the complete team player, the complete team guy. And last game, he only played a few minutes, and Dan Hurley said that was his fault. I have to find a way to get Jaden Ross in this game. I have to do a better job of it. The family never complained. He never complained. He just came out and worked hard, and he was rewarded for a career night. You saw the kid who was, you know, a borderline top 100 recruit. He has been in the shadows, but has shown glimpses in his first 3 years, and he was dynamite. Dan Hurley said in his last post-game press conference, you should see this guy practice. Well, guess what? We just saw how Jaden Ross practices. He was electric. If you didn't see the game, I mean, it was a dunkathon for Jaden Ross. Coming in, reverse jams. There was one play in the second half where he was along the baseline, the far corner of the baseline. The jump shot came from the opposite, all right, from the top of the key or so, and he came flying in and came from the other side of the rim. The ball goes up, and he came from underneath the rim, opposite side, grabbed it one hand, and slammed it. Highlight reel material. Everything he did last night was highlight reel material. And you saw his hard work pay off. Couldn't have happened to a better guy. 13 points, 8 rebounds in 25 minutes. Jaden Ross was spectacular. Solo Ball was equally as spectacular from the perimeter. This is a guy who, if you've listened to my podcast, you know, I was wondering if Solo Ball would ever shoot his way out of this slump. And I'm hoping this isn't a one game. I'm hoping this is a sign of things to come. All right. Because so this is the Solo Ball that we saw all of last year. Magnificent. And he ended up with a career high, 26 points. I didn't even realize it was a career high until I looked it up. 3 of 6 from three, hit almost all of his free throws, 7 for 8. 5 rebounds, only 1 turnover. Magnificent. As UConn Cornelius would say, magnificent. No, that wasn't UConn Cornelius. That was the gym coach reindeer when Rudolph first went up, right? Magnificent. That's what Solo Ball was. And here's what Darren Hurley had to say after the game about Solo. You better get him, because he's coming.
Yeah, I mean, watch out, you know, just, you know, he's going to get to the mean, you know, he's going to get, you know, the guy is, you know, he's elite. And, you know, I think this was, you know, just watch out. I think he's going to have a lot of nights like this.
So what does that mean? That means that Dan Hurley thinks that Solo Ball is going to eventually shoot to the back of his card, you know, shoot to his statistics. He's been under 30%. He's a 44, 42% three-point shooter. And we're going to see his numbers go up, hopefully, because UConn needs him. But this was really a game where Solo Ball and Jaden Ross were needed against Butler, because Alex Caravan didn't really do much. Terrace Reed was Terrace Reed. He was magnificent. 16-5, and I continue to say he is the most important player on this team. When he scores inside and he rebounds and he blocks shots the way he does, UConn is a championship contender. Without Terrace Reed, they are not a championship contender, and I will stand by that. But Alex Caravan wasn't great, okay? The guards were not great. Malachi Smith didn't play many minutes. It wasn't his game. Silas Demery, 2 points, did have 11 assists, okay? That's saying something about what a team player he is. 2 points, 11 assists, 6 rebounds, and defends like a maniac. That's why he's still your starting point guard. So when you're not getting scoring, however, out of Demery, you're getting everything else from him, all right? You're not getting scoring out of Malachi Smith. You're not getting scoring out of Caravan. That's when you need a team. And this UConn team is evolving. They're getting better. They are 9 deep, okay? Their second team is almost as good as their first team. And I mean that with all due respect, all right? Think about who is coming off the bench right now. You got Stewie, Jalen Stewart, Jaden Ross, Eric Reiba, McDonald's All-American, 7-footer, and Malachi Smith. 9 deep. All 4 of those players could be starters on many teams. Their practices are insane. That's why this team is getting better. There is no drop-off. So on a night when Alex Caravan only scored 4 points, when you got 2 points out of both point guards, it was Jaden Ross, it was Solo Ball, it was Terrace Reed, and my man Braylon Mullins. Man, he is just a delight to watch. I mean, the guy's got to put on some weight, okay? He's got to get a more fit physical to get to the next level. But boy, I mean, he can put the ball to the floor. He can drive to the hoop. He can shoot that 3 as good as anyone. And we're just beginning to see what he can do, all right? And he may score 20. He may not. He doesn't have to. He knows his role, and he knows when he can get his. He knows where to get open. And he knows what to do with the basketball. So UConn is playing great. And they beat a solid Butler team. This Butler team is improved. Okay. Finley Bizjak leads this team in scoring. And if you haven't seen him, he's got hair all over the place. But he can ball and he can get to the hoop. He's their leading scorer. Was shut down in this game. 2 for 9, only 7 points. And the big man, Michael Ajayi, is one of the best rebounders in the country. Only had 8 points, and yeah, he had 8 rebounds, but that's well under his season average for the leading rebounder in the Big East and the second leading rebounder in the country. UConn shut down a team that came in averaging 90 points a game, held them to a season low 60. They were 5 of 3 from 24. They shot 30% in this game. Outside of a hot start in the first, 5 minutes of this game, they were awful, about 25% from the floor. And why? Because defense travels. UConn has one of the most efficient offenses and most efficient defenses in the country. And Dan Hurley thinks that they can be a top 10 in both. And if they are, they are very much a national championship contender. Defense travels. Here's what Hurley had to say about the defense after the game.
We've got, I think a group that's got a chance to be a top 5 defensive group. Again, it starts with Silas Demery, being able to guard Bizjak the way he guarded him. Obviously, with the 2 centers that are both, big and could move in the ball screen defense and can protect the rim. I mean, we had 13 blocks today. We've got obviously the wing length. We're too deep at a lot of positions. So that's why we didn't have opportunities to do big things last year. And we've gotten it fixed, and we've got to keep it fixed.
So give it up for the Huskies. Give it up for their defense. A great game at People's Bank Arena. We saw the depth of this team. We saw the defense of this team. And they are only just beginning. We have 19 more of these. DePaul is up next, and UConn should take care of them and head into Christmas 2-0 and be right where everyone thought they would be going into New Year's Eve at Xavier. All right, speaking of DePaul, they were manhandled by St. John's. Was St. John's great in this game? No, but they were very good. And we're seeing a team that is getting better defensively. We have seen this team really defend over the last three games. And this break that we have witnessed coming back from Vegas, where whatever it was, three games in 21 days, something like that, we're seeing a team that has come out more prepared defensively. They are more in tune to defense. And even Rick Pitino had a lot of praise for his defense after this game. They have won with defense, all right? They beat DePaul. It wasn't a blowout that maybe some Johnnies fans were hoping for. They controlled really the first, I'm going to say, 15 minutes of this game where they jumped out to an 18-point lead. And after that, DePaul outplayed them. But St. John's did enough in this game. And really what it was the emergence of Dylan Darling and the reemergence of Josan Sanin. That's what this game was about. Dylan Darling is a player who I've criticized, not pointing the finger at him saying, you know, you suck, but really wondering if he was a Big East caliber player. He came in with all these accolades, being from Idaho State and the conference player of the year and, you know, one of the top 10 scorers in the country, almost averaged 20 points a game last year. Came in with you know, more honors and accolades than any other transfer for what he had accomplished in the Big Sky. But let's face it, he was lacking confidence. He was 1-for-15 from three coming into this game against DePaul. And we all know, if you follow St. John's after the last game, Rick Pitino, unprovoked, said, I have to get Dylan Darling in the gym. I have to get his confidence back. He is a player who is a 6-foot point guard who can really score the ball. But I'm going to quote Pitino here, starting tomorrow. That was Sunday. Starting tomorrow, I have to do a total makeover with Dylan Darling. I got to work on his arc, his game. He's a great 6-foot guard, but he's lacking confidence on his shot. That was clear. Well, whatever Rick Pitino did, all right, it worked. Because he told him he needed arc like Steph Curry. Because nobody shoots a 3-pointer higher than Steph Curry. And said the same thing to Josan Sanin. And it worked. Dylan Darling had a breakout game. Dylan Darling showed that he can indeed score in the Big East. He can indeed be an effective player in the Big East. And his all-around numbers were outstanding. 17 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 0 turnovers. That's the key. 0 turnovers in 25 minutes. And for the first time in four games, St. John's had more assists than turnovers. 14 assists, 10 turnovers. The last time they did that was the Baylor game. So that matters. This team has to cut down on turnovers, and they have to keep showing that they can defend, protect the ball and defend, and everything else will take shape. Afterward, I loved the exchange in the press conference with Zach Braziller from the New York Post and Rick Pitino. Zach Braziller was wondering why Ian Jackson didn't play more. All right, Ian Jackson is a point guard. That's what Rick Pitino wants him to play in his system. He's a two guard, but Rick Pitino wants him to play point guard. And he started the last game, and he started this game. And Ian Jackson has started two games in a row point guard, and I thought he played well in the first half. He got St. John's off to a good start. Finished with 10 points. He was a catalyst in the first 10 minutes of this game, and I thought he played well. Protected the ball and thought he was on his way to another real nice game. But something happened and Dylan Darling caught fire. Dylan Darling got his confidence back. Dylan Darling got his shot back. And Ian Jackson didn't play much in the second half, only 3 minutes. Only 3 minutes. And Dylan Darling was on the floor for 17 minutes in the second half. So Zach Braziller asked Rick Pitino that question after the game, and here's how it went.
Ian didn't really play much in the second half. He okay, or just that was just you wanted
How
to
could you
roll
even
right?
say that when that's Dylan's position?
What?
Do I need to explain that to you?
What?
That's Dylan's position tonight,
Okay.
Ian. So you wanted Ian to play
No,
over
I'm just
Dylan?
asking because he barely
Well,
played in the
it's
second
obvious
half.
that Dylan was playing great.
Okay.
Ian wasn't playing necessarily great defensively. And Dylan was dominating. I think you can answer your own questions without asking
Well,
me
you
questions.
played them together too.
Yeah, but I think at this point in time, we need a great defense out there.
Okay.
And he didn't do anything wrong at all. But we're just trying to win a Big East game. And I wish you'd stop asking that about Ian. Get on another player. Hop on another horse.
You mentioned the front court, Rick. What did you just see? Especially with Bryce. I don't,
Well,
last few games doesn't seem like he's
you know,
been
he's
himself.
got he's just got to pick up his effort level. A guy of his talent without a rebound, he's just got to pick up his energy. He's going through the same thing. If scoring can't make you do other things, that's why Zubi is and Dylan Mitchell bring so many other things to the table. If they're not scoring, they bring other things to the table. And he's got to learn that. He's got to pick it up right now.
Telling, right? It's telling. There is a lot of talent on this team. We know that. Up to this point, for 75% of this season, it has been a collection of individuals. It has been a collection of individuals trying to score, trying to get theirs, trying to live up to their hype. And we haven't seen a collective team. Well, maybe we're starting to see that. And maybe this year is turning into last year. Right? When St. John's came out of, what was it, the Bahamas, and they were 1-2, and people were questioning them. And this year they came out of Vegas, 1-2, and people were questioning them. And both times the criticism was deserved. But after that, the team got back to work. And we saw a team last year that became more of a team, was defending better, and was playing for one another. We're seeing that. And read between the lines with Rick Pitino. I've been very clear about this. And if you listen to Rick Pitino's press conferences and or read his quotes or you follow St. John's, you know he is praising everyone. And he will praise you when the praise is deserved. And he will rip you when you're not playing, you're not rebounding, you're not defending. So what does that tell you? I think this game, it was more about what Dylan Darling did and what Ian Jackson, more than it was more about what Dylan Darling did than what Ian Jackson didn't do. Okay. Dylan Darling was just better and deserved to be better. And Rick Pitino did not want to put them out there on the court at the same time. You heard that. But listen, Bryce Hopkins, Providence fans have seen this. He's very inconsistent. He can score 20 one night and be the best player on the court and dominate inside and outside. And then he just goes through stretches where you don't even know he's on the court. And this was one of those games you didn't even know Bryce Hopkins was on the court. How can a guy with this much talent and this much size have zero rebounds in a game? You heard Pitino, zero rebounds. That's why he didn't play. So Rick Pitino is trying not to lose his team, but he's trying to push all the buttons. It's a fine line. On any given night, any one of these players can step up and any one of these players can sit their ass on the bench. That's the message. You want to play? You better defend. You better rebound. You better take care of the ball and then score. That's the fourth option. Defend, rebound, take care of the ball, and then score. Dylan Mitchell, this wasn't your game. Bryce Hopkins, this wasn't your game. Zubi Ejiofor, he was fine. Wasn't great. Had four more blocks, right? He was good, but not great. Oziah Sellers, definitely not your game. He couldn't throw the ball onto Union Turnpike last night. I mean, he was the player of the game at Madison Square Garden against Iona, but Oziah Sellers, had some issues going and couldn't shoot the ball, wasn't feeling great, and you saw the result. But this is what is going to happen. They're not all going to be clicking on the same night. I love what I'm seeing from their defense. It's getting better. This is a collection that needs to come together and gel more as a team. I think Pitino will have this team playing better and peaking in February and March. That's what I think. You know, you also got a good game out of Ruben Prey. You know, this team is seven deep, and after that, you hope you get something out of Sadiku, Ibinayo, or Ruben Prey, or Leotopoulos, or any of those guys. But you need guys focused every night. If you're not focused, if you're not paying attention to detail and doing what Pitino wants you to do, your minutes are going to go down. It's plain and simple. So now we come to a point in the season where St. John's is playing their final non-conference game of meaning against Kentucky. The game is at a neutral site in Georgia. It is national television. It is two storied programs, and Rick Pitino against his disciple and one of his captain, and in Pope, it's Mark Pope, the mentor, the apprentice, against Rick Pitino, the master. St. John's and Kentucky, two storied programs. And this is St. John's last chance to move the needle. A quad one non-conference opportunity. I'm not calling it a must win because I think St. John's will have more than enough wins in conference and be right there. But this is about seeding. This is about confidence. Lose this game and people are going to be questioning how good this team is all season. Win this game, okay? And you're going to quiet the doubters and you're going to feel a whole lot better about where you are. And you're going to question, you know, silence the critics for the most part and just focus on basketball. It's not a must win, but it is an important win that St. John's needs to have, all right? Will it make or break their NCAA tournament hopes? No. Okay. But this is about seeding and this is about confidence and this is about quieting the doubters. So a couple of big games to start the Big East. The results everyone expected, St. John's and UConn picking up dubs. And now they head into the weekend looking for more dubs. And that is the show, ladies and gentlemen. It was a very cool Tuesday here in the Tri-State, and more games lie ahead. I will have a special guest on my next podcast. Look out for that one. Speedy Claxton and Hofstra. Speedy Claxton making his debut on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, the greatest player in Hofstra history, and a coach who made some national news when Hofstra beat Pitt and Syracuse in a span of 6 days. So that is coming up. My thanks to Dylan Wanigale from the Prudential Center. Get out and watch some damn good college basketball this weekend between Arkansas and Houston, 5:30 p.m. at the Prudential Center. Good seats are still available. Of course, my thanks to you for listening, downloading, and sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, my name is Brian Dean of Ellis. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.